Hello, I'm Floyd Maxwell, justthinkit.com, bringing you a Floydcast number 53 for February 16, 2015. I was thinking, trying to sort of theme this week and give I'm always trying for a little bit of variety and a new way of looking at things. So this week I thought I'd lead off with True of the Weeks. In other words, I went to a news site and found some true news for this week, or there's some things that are top of mind, people are thinking about a lot or chatting about a fair bit. Let's have a go at those first. Well, someone passed away this last week. Dean Smith, a famous coach, a winning coach. A coach, I guess, that's won more than 1,000 times. You know, how many people even play 1,000 games? Watch, play, coach, anything. 1,000 games. This is basketball. Let's say you play every other day. For 1,000 games to go by, it would take about almost 6 years. If you played every other day nonstop, it would take 6 years. So just to play or coach 1,000 games alone in the realistic season of 80 games a year, I think is it a 15-year career? Just to play that many. And then to win them, well, statistically you win half. The average person wins half. So take 30 years. Just to play that many and win half of them. Just the raw bulk quantity that these coaches do. You know, they are truly married to their respective sports, their games, Joe Paterno, and there are just so many great coaches, Don Landry, and I mean, it really does go on and on. This Dean Smith seemed to be a little bit extra special. Coach K. Krusiniski, Mike Krusiniski, he's a current great coach, who also recently just got his 1,000th win. ESPN did a long interview with him where he was talking about Dean Smith, and you can just tell when you hear a few words from someone that Dean Smith was a truly impactful coach and a true great, we'll say that. I don't know too much about him. I can't give a more in-depth analysis than that without just simply reading and parroting back to you. But I do have a link from the Federalist. Dean Smith, a coach for life and family. Well, that kind of gives you an indication. And the Federalist has proven to be, sometimes interesting for their stories. There was how they format stories and they have little subheadings. Within that story, I just copied one of the subheadings that said, "The best leaders care for the people they lead." You know, nowadays, you have to be reminded of that because we've completely forgot how to lead, how to care, for that matter. When you get assaulted and assailed on all sides, when you get lied to on all sides, when you have your income eroded away and stripped away by inflation and various things, it can be very hard to keep all of your basic principles intact. It's a real effort. This is one of the reasons to choose what you spend your time on. There's increasingly limited or there's decreasing amounts of time available. It's going to get worse. As they squeeze us and squeeze us, it's going to get worse. What do you want to spend your time on? There was a poll on Slashdot this last week. They wanted to know your ratio of time reading fiction versus nonfiction. And, they started off, I read 100% fiction. That was one of the choices. And I read 80% fiction and 20% nonfiction. And 50-50 and 20% fiction, 80% nonfiction, and 100% nonfiction, and then a couple of silly answers. They always have a couple of silly answers for people who like to complain. Well, what really shocked me, after I firmly lodged my vote of I read nonfiction, period, 100%, and then they show you the results of the poll, and I was completely expecting that Slashdotters of all groups would have a high percentage of people who were mostly nonfiction. And it was the opposite. The strongest poll results were for 100% fiction or 80% fiction, 20 non. And then in the comments, and the comments are really interesting on Slashdot because they're very corrupted. These days, comments everywhere are very corrupted. It's been a careful strategy. Used to be comments were open. And then, I'm going to guess the period of time, but maybe 10 years ago, the trend started where you had to log in to comment. And some sites, like it used to be Wired, for example, Wired magazine, wired.com. You could just go there and leave a comment on a story, and they would show you the comments, just as importantly. Now, when you read a story, they don't by default show you the comments, unless you're logged in. and you cannot leave a comment without being logged in. And so that was sort of like one level of onerousness, one level of obstacle. And then they made it, you might see on the internet, powered by Discus, and you see them using solutions, let's call them that, comment solution systems. And then you have to log in often these days using Facebook or your Gmail account or one of these big boys. You have to log in with the big boys when you leave a comment. For me personally, I never log in with my Facebook information. I almost never log into Facebook itself, but I certainly never use a Facebook credential anywhere else. I find Facebook repulsive on just about every level. So the idea of, you know, encouraging them is not a chance. And many Slashdotters are like that. When you're a technical person, you can see insidious waves washing over humanity, and Facebook is just such a wave. But the point is that the leaving comments has become more and more difficult. They're more and more censored and filtered and moderated. Like on Ars Technica is not worth commenting there because they will carpet bomb you with down mods if they don't like what you're saying. The days of having a discourse, having two sides of a story talked about is very long gone. Things are far too important for them to just leave it to chance. So on this story about fiction versus nonfiction, almost every comment, and I only went there at the start of that thread where there's maybe 20 comments were left, but there are clearly 20 very different people and mindsets and whatnot, but they were all pro-fiction. Now, if you think about it, let's just say you're hypothetically wanting to analyze an infected comment space, which most of them are these days. What would you look for? What would define the infection? Because it's control, right? So what would define the control? Well, you would see a consistency of viewpoint. You would see one side of a story consistently. And you would see, typically these days, they don't use a lot of different strategies. Like the pro-vaccine people, they don't use a lot of strategies. They say trust doctors. They say anti-vaccine people are idiots. I don't know if there is a third viewpoint. I think that's about it. Well, no one in their right mind trusts a doctor, and calling someone an idiot makes the name caller an idiot. It automatically should brand the name caller. But of course, they have these comments, but then they control the moderation system. So you have a story, questionable story that they choose. You have them tainting the waters with 10 or 20 comments right up front that bias the conversation, and then they sit back and they moderate. And they moderate according to the result that they want. It's pretty sad, pretty pathetic, and that's our modern world. It's very distorted. So, you know, this is the advantage of listening to a coach, watching a documentary about coaches. I'm thinking of the one with Kenny Chesney, if I could remember the name of it. But you could look up Kenny Chesney. I think he wrote a book, and then that became a documentary about coaches. He wrote a song as well. And the song plays at the end of the documentary. There's something very special about coaches. There's something very special about who influences who. And what was really interesting was, if you go to IMDb, this Kenny Chesney documentary, there's almost no comments, almost no votes. It's the exact opposite of what they want. They don't want people watching documentaries about coaches. Absolutely not. You might actually realize that, you know, there's something to be said for wisdom in old age, right? There's something to be said for someone who professionally specializes in being a coach. That's the expert. That's the true expert. Not the doctor who's paid to promote a vaccine. Who's the real coach? Well, Dean Smith was that real coach. Born in 1931. There was another coach that passed away this last week. Jerry Tarkanian. In my notes, I say that it's interesting that two different coaches passed away in this last week. We're in a nine-cycle year. The nine on the positive side is a spiritual leader and teacher. And they are two of the greats. This Tarkanian was apparently also very good, very loved. Two greats passing away, similar age. He was born in 1930, Tarkanian. And something comes in or goes out of your life in a nine-cycle. The world's in a nine-cycle, so coaches are going to be leaving in the nine cycle. Who's coming in? What influences are going to be coming in the nine cycle? I'll keep you posted, but I'm not optimistic. So I would encourage you to check out this article on Dean Smith, and whichever article you want to check out about him. It's someone whose character holds up. I think I've requested a book. Dean Smith wrote a number of books, and I'm going to check one of those out with a bit of luck, although I'm overbooking myself these days by about a factor of 10. Speaking of overbooking, I like jigsaw puzzles, and I've done hundreds of them over the last 5 years. Took it up as part of a care job where it was boring. The clients often would be doing their own thing, but you have to be there just in case, and there were some puzzles already there. There was plenty of puzzles to work on at first, and then after a while I started getting organized, and I had puzzle boards so that I could work on them with the ideal sized board, and I started buying them and bringing them to work, and then I just have really gotten into it. Well, I think I mentioned in January 12 podcast, that I started an 18,000 piece puzzle. This is the largest puzzle that Ravensburger makes. In my opinion, Ravensburger is far and away the Mercedes-Benz of puzzles, German company. And I looked online and people were commenting about it on Amazon, you know, about this particular puzzle and various interesting thoughts about it. And so I started working, and I wasn't going to deliberately, you know, log hours and hours per day. I was going to chip away at it. And one person said they try and do 50 pieces or 100 pieces a day. And I thought, that's kind of a good idea. If you need a guideline, come along and work for an hour or two and then go and do something else. And so I did that. I had that kind of an approach. I didn't track my time. But I think I average about 2 hours a day. Well, I've done one quarter of it. It comes in four bags, four sections. I've done one of the sections now and it's glued. The thing is massive. Just this is one quarter of it, and it is already the largest puzzle I've ever assembled. I've assembled one other puzzle that's the same size. That one was a 5,000-piece Ijuka puzzle about a famous set of sort of rock formations, island rock formations in Asia. I've forgotten where. Thailand or something like that. And so it kind of surprised me. I did one quarter of it in a month. So I was estimating it was going to take closer to, you know, 6 or 9 months, so it went a little faster than I thought it would. And on the second section, I'm going to deliberately try and track my time and try and, you know, do it more efficiently than the first one. So it's starting to get interesting now. But, you know, the scale of a big puzzle. It's good to have things that really stretch us. It's like with this Floyd cast. I don't want it to just be a formula. Any formula, really. I would like it to have truth or wisdom behind it. I'd like it to be something that you enjoy listening to more than once. Because there's so much crap out there. The really good things, it's actually hard to find something that you want to listen to more than once. It's hard to make something that you want to listen to more than once. But it's an honorable goal. And it's soothing. You know, the really great things in life that we really like our coffee or a certain meal or a TV show, they're soothing. There's a soothing quality. They calm us down. They nurture us and they give us nutrient. And I think a good podcast should be exactly like that. I don't think there should be jarring elements to it. I don't think there should be noise and fluff and filler, like, for example, commercials. You know, if people want to sell a podcast, I think iTunes now sells them, you know, sort of thing. It's been commercialized. That's fine. I don't particularly want to go that route. The one possibility of pushing me in that direction is that there are bots and programs on the internet. They started with the search engines. The search engines would go out and they would index the entire internet, or chunks of it. That's how Google and some of these big ones, Bing and various ones, that's how they operate. They index the internet, which is really amazing. But the problem is, they go and they, you know, read your whole site kind of thing. And if they index images, they're going to read all your images. If they index MP3, and some of these specialized ones these days index MP3, they're going to download all your MP3s. Well, these MP3s are big files. These podcasts are big files. They're some of the biggest files on my website. In fact, I think they are, certainly on average and certainly in total, they're the biggest. There's not too many other things I have that are bigger. I don't think there's anything that approaches these. Anyway. Well, the point is, you add one of those a week and, you know, you end up having a lot of them. And then if you make them too readily available, these bots come along and they download everything you got. It can start to become prohibitive. These bots can make things kind of economically prohibitive. So I don't want to have to go that route, but it might be pushed. And I might come up with, again, with unique strategies to get around it. Really, if you think about it, the bots are yet another way to run down the internet, yet another way to get rid of the little guy, the truth. The big guys, the way they solve it is they generate unique links. When you want to download something, they give you a unique link. And so the bots don't know about those links, and they just simply make it harder for the bots. And that's fine, you know, if you have that technology or whatever, that's a good solution. I don't want to go complexity. My website is a very simple website on purpose. And also, I'll take another tack. So coaches passing away in the 9 year, some great coaches, you know, it's just a shame there isn't. There should be a coaching channel. There should be a channel on the TV that is nothing but coaching. That's how important it is. But of course, that's the opposite of what they want. Another true of the week, as I'm calling them. Benedict Cumberbatch marries Sophie Hunter in Valentine's Day ceremony. This is something that's normally trash, right? Celebrities marry celebrities, or celebrities marry non-celebrities. You know, this happens all the time. But I thought, hey, let's have a look at the numbers. You know, just like I analyzed Gwen Stefani last week or the week before, her and her miracle marriage, and it actually mathematically made sense. They had a lot of stable numbers. Numbers that crave, you know, marriage and support and stability, and that's why they were together. Well, let's have a look at these two and see if they've got those numbers. So Benedict, 178. That's a strong, selfish number or name. Cumberbatch, 966. Intelligence, it's like this name Smith, North American name Smith. Same combination, 966. So the only problem is with the 966 is the 9 has such strong desire to serve or to give or to be everything to everybody kind of thing. And so the 966 is a little bit unbalanced that way. It's interesting, I just realized Dean Smith, the guy who passed away. Smith, 966. And Dean, by the way, I should have analyzed his name. Dean, 696. Dean Smith had three different prominent sixes. Four prominent sixes in six positions. That's an exceptionally high number of sixes. The only thing he lacked in terms of balance was he had a three destiny rather than a six or an eight. But the three, you know, they're often drawn into sports. They love life. And there he was drawn into sports. Very interesting. So Mr. Cumberbatch, strong, selfish first name and a pretty good family name, better than average. What's his total? 145 total, 5 destiny. So that's not good. That's chaos, travel, change. That's more selfishness with the one. That's bitter experiences with people. That's not good. And again, our metric was how many even numbers versus odd numbers. He has an even number in the first name and one even number in the last name, and that's it. So 4 out of 6 positions, odd numbers. Not a good start. Let's have a look at Sophie. Sophie, S-O-P-H-I-E, 279. 279, very emotional, very two-ish. They do need support of others. Basically, that first name is going to make her dependent. It's going to make her want to partner with others and to give in to others as part of keeping the relationship going. What about the last name, Hunter? 865. I think of that as a Mission Impossible total. Super confident, very, very ambitious. No stability, 5 expression in that last name. Very confident and strong and active and intense and can be controlling too, I suppose. So within her own family, she's very different from that family name. And she's probably like the puppy dog, the kitty cat of that family name. What about the two together? Add the two together, 145 total, 5 destiny. Exactly the same total and destiny as Benedict Cumberbatch. So one, that position is how you look at the future. You want the way you look at the future to be broad, ideally, and humanitarian, caring about others. You don't want it to be selfish. Well, the one quality in the name is a narrowing influence, and it's a self-focused influence. So that's not good. And then, of course, 5 destiny for both of them. They're each going to be drawn into change, travel, new experiences. Bitter experiences. The 5 wants it all. The 5 lives 3 times as much as other numbers. It's just more intense, more active. It just go, go, go. I'm sorry, I don't see any chance of this marriage working. I'm going to put this in the category of 2 years from now, this will not be happening. Now, the one positive with the one quality is that they're loyal. So even though they're selfish, they're loyal. like my parents were both ones in the birthday, and they didn't get a divorce, even though my mom was very unhappy shortly after the relationship, the marriage started. She was unhappy. She martyred herself. She stayed even though she wanted to go for many, many years. And then she decided when we had all graduated from high school, then she would go, and she did. She moved out. They still didn't get a divorce. And they remained good friends. And when my dad had his major health problems, my mom stepped up and provided more care and more visits and really kept my dad alive. And they were good friends to the end. That's the one quality. So that's a countering influence where even if things get bad for these two, there's some pretty strong loyalties there. These two are inclined with their numbers to lock horns and to headbang in a similar kind of way because they have similar numbers. And so, you know, she'll give in, then she'll fight, and then they'll both fight, bang, bang, and then we'll see what happens. You know, it's interesting. As you sort of develop a good filter for the news, you know, you realize, why do they show you a given story? And always these days, I realize that they always show you something when it's not a threat to them. A famous celebrity marrying someone, what could be less of a threat to them? Nothing could be less of a threat. They eat this stuff up for breakfast. They depend on celebrities that they can promote when they feel like it and that they can destroy when they feel like it. All right, another story, sort of the week. I think this might have happened 2 weeks ago, but recently anyway. The inventor of the laser passed away, Charles Townes. There's only one problem. He didn't actually invent the laser. Gordon Gould did. But for 30 years, Charles Townes profited from what someone else invented. Now, Charles Townes invented the maser. Laser is light. The L stands for light, and M in maser stands for microwave. The first laser light device was actually a microwave radiation device, which is interesting in itself. Anyway, he did develop the maser, and then Gould developed the laser, but Townes took credit for it. And this fight went on for a long time. So let's have a look at the numbers of these two and sort of decide for yourself who did what. So Charles Townes, Charles 663, Townes, T-O-W-N-E-S, 246, 819 total. First of all, that's not successful by itself. Nine destiny, it's not good. Second of all, there's no science numbers there. There's no one, there's no four, there's no five. So this doesn't even look like a scientist, first of all. But when you go to Wikipedia for Charles Townes, the Wikipedia entry is called Charles H. Townes. When you put the eight in there, he has the maximum success destiny. Eight destiny. He was born July 28, 1915. Let's look at those numbers. 717 for a 6. Well, now we've got a bit of the 1 in there. That's more of an inventing quality. And we also have the 7. And the 6 is flexible, like it can do anything. Not that it's omni-talented, but if a 6 directs themselves towards a subject, they can get good at it, which is why you want the 6 in a name. It gives you the maximum ability in your name, in your mind. So 6 under 7, 6 under 1. So the 7 is electricity. Well, there he is, the maser and the laser. There, it's all about electricity. So we can see that this guy could be successful. And we've also talked about the 8 being a quality that can do illegal things, do improper things to make money. All right, what about Mr. Gould? Gordon Gould. Gordon, 371. Gould, 955. 336 total. The one is an inventor in a very practical sense, in a they don't need much to invent with kind of sense. So he's got that in the first name. The last name, 955. Well, the 955 is super driven. You know, you want to look at someone who really, whatever he would think about a lot. Look at a 955. So that's his last name. And then his total, 336, it's a very good total right off the bat, you might say. And it's very balanced. And by the way, Gould did try and fight this Townes and try and get his credit back. And it took 30 years. It took 30 years for him to get his rightful credit. And even then, when Townes passes away, most of the media was crediting Townes with the invention of the laser, including Slashdot. That was kind of amazing. There were commenters going, hey, I thought it was Gould, but the original submitted story credited Townes. What they should have been, the story should have been, was this crook who stole from another guy for 30 years, but hey, they benefited. That's why they don't represent it that way. The stories that you read and how they're presented directly reflect what the 1% want. What about birthday? Gordon Gould, born July 17, 1920, 783. 783 is a 9. So he's that specializing, that 9, also under 7 first minor, and then an 8 middle minor. Okay, maybe mathematically the birthday doesn't get in the way, but it's kind of similar to the other guys. Let's just put it that way. They're both very similar. Anyway, a true of the week, and let's give a shout out to Gordon Gould, who did the actual work of inventing the laser. A few more updates now. This is sort of corrections, we should call them, but I'm not going to call them corrections because that reflects badly on me. So I'm going to call them updates. I'm keeping you posted on Manawi. You know, I talked about Elsie Eller, how independent and five-ish she was. I didn't work out the town of Manawi, that combination. Manawi is a 358 M-O-N-O-W-I. Very good combination, very stable. You know, and that's one of the reasons why that community has survived, is it attracts stability. So the town attracted her as much as she wanted to be there. They attracted someone who was dedicated and willing to dedicate themselves to keeping the town going. If you want something to survive and thrive, give it a good name. Next update. I talked about how sex sells. Well, here's a quote from Norman Mailer, which I just ran across. Kind of summarizes it pretty good. There's a subterranean impetus towards pornography so powerful that half the business world is juiced by the sort of half-sex that one finds in advertisements. They make issues about things like sex so that they can censor and be involved in control, so that they can create the amount of it or lack of it that will be the most profitable and most controlling at the same time. Think about it from their point of view. Isn't it fantastic? It can be the most profitable and the most controlling. It's like if you take a record, the old phonograph record, it has a spiral groove. It's like it's a path. It's a long path. But when it skips, it jumps back. It doesn't just stay on one track. It actually spirals down slightly, and then it gets to a point where the damage makes it literally jump out, probably with the centrifugal force of the record playing. So in the case of the skipping record, as that record keeps playing the same track, it digs deeper. I've done that on a record, have it skip, you know, an extended amount, like more than once. And after it does that, it will always skip there. And then if you're not careful, it will never get beyond there. And then your record is ruined. Well, this is the way our world is set up. Skipping records all over the place. Take any subject you want to think about, and they've designed it to be a skipping record. Let's take abortion. They've set up the battlegrounds. They've labeled the combatants. It's Republicans against Democrats, which is ludicrous in itself. It should have nothing to do with politics. Absolutely nothing. Because it should be about choice. And it should be about education. But they don't want education to do anything good. Education is the biggest threat to them. So they have to move every subject away from it being an education subject, and they have to polarize it. And once they set up the polarization, they control the media, so they can just keep pushing that message. And then after a while, you've burned in the track. Vaccinations. They burned in a track which says vaccinations are good. Right now there's a huge movement to force everyone to be poisoned, force everyone to be wounded, damaged, injured, assaulted by toxic chemicals and viri and various things that will in fact actually give people the diseases they are supposedly inoculating them against. And this is being forced on us. And how is it being forced? Well, the doctors know, and we should shut up and do it. That's how it's being forced. Well, they're all saying that message. The record is already skipping a lot. And they own the medium. They can just shout down any other viewpoint. But let's say that was a big deal for me, talking about vaccines. I won't say it's not a big deal. But it's just one of the many irons in my fire, I guess. But let's say I want to try and reach you with it. Not easy. The truth is, it's not easy to get out when you have a very loud record that's skipping. So thanks, Norman Mailer, for saying it eloquently. Another update. I had talked about that antifungal ad at the Super Bowl that was a really horrendous, hideously ugly ad. Turned out the product is called Jublia or Jublia, J-U-B-L-I-A. When you analyze it, 461 combination. I've noticed that they, when they really want to drive a wedge into an area, they will use 461 combinations. The 4 has no vision, so it's not going to change. It's just going to stay and do the same thing. The 1 is that pioneering, that push, that drive. Normally, the 1 quality by itself is not profitable, but the way they get around that is, you know, the full name of this product is not Jublia. It's whatever. When you research product names, you find out there's many names. I did some work for some trust companies in Canada, and it was really interesting to find out the actual names of the trust companies, and they were just not anything related to what you thought they were. I've forgotten more than I remember what the exact names, but an example was the Bank of Montreal. They had an abbreviation. It was Mon, M-O-N, something. Mon Trust, or it wasn't Mon Trust, but it was like that. The trust component. Well, the point is that when you worked out those combinations, they were good combinations. So the wedge, the 461, the unbalanced combination, is what we see. They want us to be unbalanced, and they want us to be penetrated by and then become, you know, servants promoting a nasty wedge, we'll call it. It's something I haven't fully developed the concept of talking about that. It's one of those more sophisticated, very much behind the scenes, subtle things that they do to use the combinations. I have studied the combinations in the past, and I actually first started with Apple Computer. It's one of their favorite combinations. When you work on Apple Computer, it's a 268 total. And their businesses, the businesses they want to be successful, you will see that 268 total again and again and again. And some variations, but most commonly that 268. So Jublia was the antifungal. They're still advertising that thing. It's really kind of takes a lot of balls to advertise something as ugly as Jublia, where you're basically advertising a toxin. And speaking of that, Botox. They're now recommending people use Botox to fight cluster headaches or headaches. What was really interesting, all you had to do is listen to some part of the disclaimer text, the caveats, the conditions, the side effects. And they were saying that with the people tested, you know, 10, I don't even remember the units, let's say 10% of them got results, you know, with this Botox injection for their headaches. Compared to, and they said this right in the ad, compared to 7% for placebo. The testing was so bad that a placebo, i.e. nothing, got rid of headaches. Almost as good as the Botox injection. Botox is a poison. People got it injected in their foreheads to get rid of wrinkles because it killed the cells. You're injecting small amounts of an extreme poison locally to kill the muscle cells that were contracting to form a wrinkle. Just think about that. Can you kill part of me, please? So that I will look prettier. Just think about that level of lunacy. And now they're extending it. Oh, it can fight headaches. Well, you know, if you're killed, you don't have a headache. You know, it's a good point. We should all kill ourselves and then we won't have headaches. Well, we can start with Botox injections for our headaches. That's a good first place to start. There is a story on fizz.org, kind of an interesting title to it. Failure in real science is good. And different from phony controversies. And this connects, this relates to last March's Bicep 2 fiasco. This issue has been going on now for 10 months. The Bicep 2 people basically announced, hey, we've proved everything. All of our stupidness of physics, we proved it all. There was inflation, there was a big bang. And my response when that all came out was, I doubt it. And sure enough, a week later, it was already staggering under its own bad foundations. Well, now, here's a paper. Last March, the Bicep collaboration announced they had used a microwave telescope at the South Pole to detect gravitational waves, blah, blah, blah. Now, this last week, a new paper was released backtracking on March 2014 announcements. They were contaminated by dust. And then, here's the crux of this article. It says, did the hype hurt or help science? Well, now, here's the point. They control the message entirely. Everything that happens, that's exactly what they want. So they want Bicep 2 to be promoted. So, of course, this story is going to then say that, you know, the Bicep 2 failing was a good thing. Now that's spin, baby. When you can take something as ludicrous and embarrassing as Bicep 2 and say it was a good thing, that's spin. There is a point, yes, you know, failure can lead to success, and we need to be stressed and tested to become better. I agree with all that. Maybe putting it another way, the failure of Bicep 2 is not going to lead to better science. I'll just flat out say it that way. Because they don't want it to. There's no money in good science. Good science is 1,000 times simpler than bad science. It's like if you find out there's 2 or 3 healthy foods and you eat them, game over. You don't need supplements, you don't need medications, you don't need trips to the doctor, you don't need counseling, you don't need time off work, you don't need a babysitter, you don't need a doctor, da 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 da. You just eat healthy foods. So they have to get us away from the healthy foods. There's no money in that. We are their property. Their chattels? Is that the word? Another update. Arrest made in Robert Allenby's case. Robert Allenby was the golfer with the Five Destiny who got robbed and then had the media kind of turn on him and challenge him and doubt him. And his bad experience went to the horrific level and sort of pegged there for a number of months. Well, now a 32-year-old man who was already arrested has now been charged with Allenby's assault or whatever, his crime against Allenby. It's interesting, the coverage of this on ESPN was particularly embarrassing. They just copied the story from, I think, the Associated Press. They just, you know, had a super brief page on it. I'll give you the link, but you'll see what I mean. And that's because Allenby turned against the media. And he basically said he didn't trust any of the media as a result of this incident. Well, this is what happens when you have a five destiny. Things go badly for you in an unfair way, and then they go worse. Ultimately, you get bitter experiences with people, and you lose confidence in other people. And then your life really becomes awful. The five destiny is constantly going from bad to worse. Just imagine, 1 in 9 people has a five destiny. If they sign differently than their name, then they have 2 chances in 9 of having a five destiny. Maybe their initials reduced to a 5. Your initials are a factor. In some jobs I've had, that you use your initials all the time. You use them to log in. 3 chances in 9 of having a 5. All right, another current story, another true of the week. Smoking is even deadlier than previously thought. The funny thing is, look at the wording of this sentence here. A new study has found that in addition to the well-known hazards of lung cancer, artery disease, heart attacks, etc. Well, they call those things hazards. Lung cancer is not a hazard. It's a consequence. The hazard is the smoking. How could they get that screwed up, even in the summary of this story? I don't know. The well-known hazards. In addition to the well-known negative consequences from smoking, there's new ones. As expected, death rates were higher among smokers, but diseases known to be caused by tobacco accounted for only 83% of the excess deaths in people who smoked. They found that compared to people who never smoked, smokers were about twice as likely to die from infections, kidney disease, respiratory ailments, and hypertensive heart disease. Well, you know, one of the points is that, like with microwave radiation, they're wondering, does it cause cancer? Well, one of the things is that our bodies, just in their normal operations, cause cancer. But our bodies can deal with cancer. And the most effective thing that our body has to deal with cancer is melatonin. Melatonin is secreted at nighttime, and when you sleep, your body rebuilds. That's when you sleep. That's when you dream. If you don't sleep well, if you don't dream, you don't rebuild. Microwave radiation, having your cordless decked phone base station right next to your bed, as a friend of mine had, that's what stops your sleep. I talked to him, said, simple experiment, turn off that cordless base when you sleep. Bang, he had a good night's sleep. So they control us by going, well, we supposedly tested, and you know, they set up a ridiculous scenario where the smoking, in this case, or the microwaves, they don't cause the cancer. Well, fair enough with the microwaves. It's not really a good descriptor to say it causes cancer, but it definitely stops our body from rebuilding. I know that absolutely from personal experience, that once we got rid of microwave radiation to a really serious extent around here, the sleeping, the rebuilding, and the energy, the feel-good in the morning, it went from feeling like horrible in the morning. The neighbor said it really well. She's like an 80-year-old, sweet old lady. She said, I'd wake up in the morning and I'd want to go back to bed. That's what happens when you're under microwave radiation, because you're not sleeping. And I was doing this. I was having 2 naps a day. I was having a nap in the morning. Now I'm lucky if I can nap for 15 minutes after having an exhausting day. What should be an exhausting day. Yesterday I planted trees again. I've been helping plant trees on Saturdays. And you know, you work really hard for like 4 hours. And then I do other things, you know, and I get up many hours before the planting, do the planting, and then do other things the rest of the day. And I think I had a total of maybe 30 minutes napping yesterday. I was tired, but I didn't have to nap. Smoking is even deadlier than previously thought. You know, what's the point? Smoking produces so many bad things that I don't know what to say about this story. It's like that booze story where they're announcing that 80,000 people a year died from booze. And this one, by the way, says it's 500,000 from smoking. Why do they turn it into one story every few months? Why don't they institutionalize the solution? Because they don't want it, right? They placate us. They just keep us going. They just keep status quoing everything. Every level of problem that's here right now, they want it. They don't want it to change. It's an interesting story. I just happened to stumble across in a local paper. The local rag, as my dad would say. I don't know if you've heard of Plaid Pantry. I don't know how big this chain of convenience stores is. It's sort of like a 7-Eleven. It just happens to be in this area. I think it's like a Western America chain of stores. Story headline, Plaid Pantry robbed, customer apprehends perp. So that's kind of interesting when the customer gets involved, right? So what's the combination of Plaid Pantry? In the past, I knew I had worked it out. I knew it wasn't good, but I thought, let's work it out again. Plaid, 156, Pantry, 134. When you add it all up, 281 total, one destiny. Well, we say with the one destiny, you know, hard physical things happen. Very discordant combination. Now, obviously, convenience stores are a top priority for meth heads and other bank robbers and, you know, all that mentality, right? It's not news that these stores are going to be robbed. But when you have a bad combination, they're going to get more than their share of robberies. The combination is going to attract the wrong crowd. The combination determines everything. It determines what you stock in your store. It determines the vibration, the feel of your store. It determines how you light your store, what hours you operate. It determines everything. So we got a bad combination for Plaid Pantry in general. The alleged perpetrator was a guy, Leslie Richard Souza. Leslie 178, Richard 167, Souza 191, 191 last name. 347 total. We've talked about the 347 where they can become obsessed. You might as well just assume that. So he's got a total that can lead to obsession. So this guy was troubled from an early age. Now he probably goes by Leslie Souza. When you work that out, he has a 279 total, 9 destiny. Well, that's the losing destiny, right? And then the 2, it's interesting in that total, 279, the 2 doesn't want to work. And to live the higher side of a 9 destiny, you have to give, but you don't want to work, so then you try and take. And then you lose. That's the story of this guy's life. This actual story of what happened last week or whatever is the story of this guy's life. Imagine. The family name, Souza 191. This is such a staggeringly physical combination. Very inclined to physical violence, physical everything. That's their perspective. That's the lens that they view the world with. He has one in the first name as well, so he has a lot of ones around. He goes into a one-ish establishment and physically assaults it, right? And then the establishment, one of the customers, assaults him back. So when you're going to the Plaid Pantry, you're going into a 281, you're going into this one-ish environment. First of all, you have to be one-ish to go in there. Like attracts like. And then when something bad happens, the one quality is like, well, I'm not going to put up with that. One other little tidbit, the store address, the numbers of the address, 5415. When you reduce all that, a 5 address. So it's a 5 address, a 1-ish store, and a guy with 3 ones out of, wait a second, depending how you work out his name, ones in 4 different positions out of the 6. If you just analyze the one, you would be describing this guy. The Perfect Storm, is that what they called that movie? This is the prototypical Plaid Pantry robbing. Corporate must have to do the PR press releases on 100 of these a year. It wouldn't surprise me. Next story. M.O. family charged with teaching boy about stranger danger by kidnapping him at gunpoint. Apparently this 6-year-old was considered too nice by his Missouri family. They developed an elaborate plot involved tying the kid's hands, covering his face, and threatening him with a gun. Sometime before February the 2nd, the boy's aunt, Denise Crutill, approached a man, worked at a gas station to enlist him in the scheme. So they got help from somebody else. So this guy they sort of hired. He waited for the 6-year-old to get off the bus, lured him into his truck. Once the boy was in the truck, he began threatening him that he would never see his mom again. And then some horrific other threats. The boy started to cry. Then he pulled out a handgun and threatened him. He bound the boy's hands and feet with plastic bags, covered his face with a jacket, took him to the basement of the boy's house where his aunt waited. For 4 hours, the family terrorized this 6-year-old. Throughout the incident, the boy's mother and grandmother remained in contact with the person they hired to do this kidnapping. The aunt pulled down his pants and embarrassed him in that way. When the boy didn't try to resist the aunt got more upset. Then he was left alone for a period of time before the family finally called the whole thing off. When they finally unbound his hands and feet, they took him upstairs where he got a lecture about stranger danger. According to police, the family didn't think they did anything wrong because they were simply trying to teach him a lesson. The boy has gone into protective custody. His alleged fake kidnapper, along with the aunt and the grandmother, have all been charged with felony kidnapping, felony restraint, felony abuse, and neglect of a child. The boy's mother has been charged with felony kidnapping, felony abuse, and neglect of a child. A horrific story. It's boggling that it actually happened. The aunt's name, so we're looking for the one quality, right? Denise, 112, so she's got the one right in their first name, so that's the physical. They have to do something physically, that's how they relate, that's what makes sense to them. Crutil, last name, 977, the seven misunderstandings with others, secretiveness. You don't just lecture the boy about stranger danger, you have to create an elaborate acting job. The sevens often go into acting, you have to act it all out. In this aunt's mind, she had to act it out. And then her total, when you had Denise and Crutil together, 189 total, 9 destiny. Well, she lost out, and that's no surprise, but the one quality again. So full of ones, which means it has to be physical, full of sevens, so it has to be acting. Isn't that bizarre? And then the mom, speaking of more acting, Elizabeth 257. And now we have the crazy last name in Hupp, H-U-P-P, 347, we just talked about that. And, wow, the mom, I apologize, I should have worked all these out before because they're really quite interesting. The mom's combination of total 595, total 5 destiny. Wow. Looks like the grandmother by her name sort of just kind of went along with it, judging by her name combinations. The guy they randomly pulled from a gas station who's now had his life ruined randomly. Let's have a look at him because he's a victim too, really. First name Nathan, N-A-T-H-A-N, 224. First thing you say about a 224, not at all constructive. So he attracts something that's not good because of his name, truly. Last name, Firoved, F-I-R-O-V-E-D, 257, and a 472 total. Wow, a not at all constructive total, like tests related to people. That's how you'd analyze his total. And his first name, tests related to people. He's got that in 2 out of 3 positions. And then a very weak last name, two-ish first name. He has 2s everywhere. He has 3 2s in his name, so that's a quality that tends to partner with others and tends to get led by others. Wow, he is definitely a victim in this as well. Isn't it an amazing story? Totally crazy story, but when you look at the numbers, every part of it you can see. It all makes sense, in quotes, in a bad way, based on the numbers. The next story, I gave it my own title. I called it The 5 Destiny in Action. Man charged with assaulting 2 flight attendants in Charlotte. 41-year-old Jonathan Marois, M-A-R-O-I-S, of Phoenix, charged with simple assault and assault inflicting serious injury. Isn't that weird? Simple assault? Incident happened January 27 while an American Airlines flight was on the ground. He became irate and he attacked 2 flight attendants. They don't know what prompted the attack or they haven't said. One flight attendant was taken to hospital, the other one suffered minor injuries. Let's look at his name. Jonathan, J-O-N-A-T-H-A-N, 832. Now we say, normally the 2 quality, you think the nicest quality. The most tactful, kind, and won't say a bad word, and church mouse kind of quality. Until it snaps. Last name Marois, M-A-R-O-I-S, 753. We talked about the 753 before, the George combination, Pamela combination. 753, street angel, home devil. In other words, it's a split personality. And sure enough, this guy split, didn't he? Now, we're looking for what would cause this guy to snap. I already spoiled it by giving it my own title to the story. He's got a 5 destiny. He's got a 685 total, 5 destiny. So something made this guy snap, and then his whole life is ruined. You know, with the 5 destiny, your life is bad, it's unfair, it's chaotic, it keeps breaking on you. And then it gets worse if you get upset about it. Could there be a more unfair destiny than a 5 destiny? Former boxer's home damaged in Chandler fire. Fire started around 2 a.m. in the back room of Zora Foley's former home. I guess this Zora Foley was a... I think he was a boxer. It's right in the title of the story. I'll wake up. And then the son now lives in this home. Zora Foley Jr. said, "I thought I was in a dream when I got the call. I didn't think it was real." Let's have a look at his names. Zora 786, Foley 213, Jr. 911 for 911 total one destiny. And then it's just straight Zora Foley. He has a 999 total. If memory serves, there was a coach, Carolina coach, in his home he lost, and it was either like a 5 destiny or a 9 destiny too. So anyway, just by looking at his numbers, I'm going to say this is probably legit. It's not just someone trying to burn their home down to collect the insurance money. One man was inside the house when the fire started. He called 911 and was able to get out safely. This is now the son talking about his dad, the boxer. "My dad was very proud of Chandler. When he was introduced at fights, he never said he was from Arizona. He always said Chandler or Chandler. So there's a guy minding his own business and his house burns down around him. 999 total or 911 total one destiny." Wow. It's a funny story. Robert Phillips, suburban West Palm Beach man, lists drug dealer as occupation on arrest report. Deputies say the 25-year-old Robert Michael Phillips was arrested Tuesday. He'd cut in front of an unmarked police car, nearly caused a crash. He was driving a stolen car. The detective followed this guy and watched as he engaged in a drug transaction. Then deputies in marked cars caught up to him. He fled. Just imagine the amount of charges this guy is going to get. Deputies eventually arrested him, who was in possession of 22 grams of heroin, $2,000 in cash. Search of his car yielded 5 grams of crack cocaine. He's facing multiple drug charges and remains in jail, $250,000 bond. Let's look at his name. They say his name is Robert Michael Phillips, Robert 246, Michael 696, Phillips 922. If you looked at those numbers, there's not a single bad number anywhere there. But when you add them together, 865 total, 5 destiny. Oh man, the 5 destiny strikes again. I'm just stepping through these aren't organized. Beats. This was kind of a nice human interest story. Heart and soul, Detroiter walks 21 miles in work. Quote, "He doesn't look athletic, but James Robertson, age 56, of Detroit, has a champ's commute." Maybe that's why I thought it was a sports story. "He rides buses partway, but walks 21 miles round trips to a factory 5 days a week. Every trip is an ordeal of mental and physical toughness for the soft-spoken man with a perfect attendance record." So he walks 21 miles a day to and from work, and he never misses. Every day is a tribute to how much he cares about his job, his boss, and his co-workers. His daunting walks and bus rides in all kinds of weather reflect the challenges some Metro Detroiters face in getting to work in a region of limited bus service, where car ownership is priced beyond the reach of many. But you won't hear Robertson complain, nor his boss. "I set our attendance standard by this man," said Todd Wilson, plant manager. "I say, if this man can get here, walking all those miles through snow and rain, well, I'll tell you, I have people in Pontiac 10 minutes away, and they say they can't get here. Bull!" Then Mr. Robertson says, "I sleep a lot on the weekend." And then he says, "I can't imagine not working." His job pays $10.55 an hour. Right now, Washington State has passed a bill where their new minimum wage next year is going to be $15 an hour. This guy makes $10.55. The unfair state of affairs right now in America regarding the minimum wage is it's criminal on a massive scale. So his job is not enough for him to buy, maintain, and insure a car. And I say that's the real punchline of the story. Luckily, there are plenty of millionaires and billionaires around to profit from this guy, right? This story elaborated that in one of these sections of the city that he walks through going to work, they decided they couldn't afford buses, and so there's no bus service in that community, and so they can't provide bus service through that community because that one community stopped it. So thanks to one community, it affected this guy who's beyond that community. What a nightmare. Let's look at his name. James Robertson. Robertson is 819. James 663, 3 destiny, and a 573 total. In the total, the top number, the first number, is how you look at the future. So this guy, he looks at the future five-ishly. So when you have a problem and you're five-ish, you just get going. If you have to get somewhere to do something, you just start physically moving. So if you have to walk 10 miles each way, yeah, you just start walking. And he just never changed. Well, why did he not change? Three destiny. You know, the three is a people number, and it's easily happy. And, you know, if you think about it, even though the story has a lot of sort of agendas behind it, and it reveals a lot of bad things, for the guy himself, you can do a lot worse than walking 20 miles a day. It's good for you. You know, it's maybe not an ideal length. Maybe the ideal length is a half or a third of that. But still, you could do a lot worse than that. You know, really the lesson of this James Robertson is don't complain. Another interesting thing is the boss, Todd Wilson. The most responsible number is the 6. They often say that the owner of a factory might be an 8, but the managers, the supervisors, you would like them to be 6-ish. So is this guy 6-ish? Todd 617, Wilson 652, 369 total, 9 destiny. And there he is. The 369 total is sort of, can be almost like a cheerleader on the positive side. It can be a kind of an inspirational quality. And there he is. He couldn't be happier. He sees the situation clearly. There's nothing you can almost even say about Todd Wilson from this story because he just sees the situation clearly. That's the advantage of a balanced name. You don't distort life, and life doesn't come down hard on you because you're not distorting life. My next story here is Neil deGrasse Tyson, Truth Challenged. This was like yet another story about this Neil deGrasse Tyson. I had my own stories I talked about, I think, last week, where he misquoted from someone he thought was Einstein. It was actually Wheeler, and apparently he's chronic. He does this. This particular story, I think this was what got me started before I read all the other stuff. This story was talking about why is Wikipedia deleting all references to Neil Tyson's fabrications? That was really interesting. You know, Wikipedia, again, is something we tend to trust. And I reference it a lot, and there's a lot of trustworthy stuff in there. But there's so much agenda stuff, and there's so much secretive editing and reverting, getting rid of edits. And so in this case, that someone is whitewashing Neil deGrasse Tyson continuously. And sure enough, when you go to Neil deGrasse Tyson's page, oddly, there's no controversy section. At a minimum, there should be. He's done things that were wrong and controversial, and none of it's there. There's no controversy with this guy. And then it turns out this person in this article outs. He gives you the name of the person at Wikipedia who is doing the editing, i.e. reverting, on the Neil deGrasse Tyson page. And that guy has a quote on his page. The editor's page says, Serenity believes, so this guy's, his username is Zero Serenity. Serenity believes religion is poison. So Neil deGrasse Tyson is famous for having an anti-religion point of view, a pro-science point of view. And this guy obviously supports that and is not allowing any controversy into Neil deGrasse Tyson's page. Kind of fascinating. I think I'm going to get to my of the weeks. Bad driver of the week. Jaguar Land Rover's virtual backseat driver could stop you hitting cyclists. The system uses sound, lights, and touch to warn drivers of nearby cyclists. So this is kind of an interesting thing. The progress has been towards self-driving cars and towards cars that are detecting other cars. So they call it lane change, proximity warnings, you know, that kind of thing. But this is a good one, warning you about bikes and about other people. All of this is going to be bundled together. And one of the things we learned about the computing field is you can bundle more and more value for the same price. Putting it another way, the first computers, you had to make the computer work. It did absolutely nothing. And then you had computers that you could turn it on and it would let you do something. I'm thinking like the Commodore 64. You could program it to get it to do something. And then you started having games and the Apple II and various things. You started having applications and programs and we started to see a use for them. Then IBM came in and then they took it to the next level of economy, of cheapness, and people copied it and then it became affordable. You know, the stage right after the IBM PC was kind of like the Henry Ford and the Model T. When we had compatibles to IBM's, then everyone could afford a computer. Well, the progression since then was we had, you know, still had lousy software, lousy operating systems, but they got better and better. If you look at a modern computer, when you buy that modern computer, when you buy a stripped-down computer from Costco, it comes with Windows. And if you look at what Windows offers, you can surf the net and you can do email and you can probably make a case that with completely free software, you could do everything your heart could imagine on that computer for nothing, for no cost. And that's the lesson of computing is that you can afford to bundle more and more over time. So in other words, we're at the early stages of talking about some of the cool features in high-end cars and new cars that will be safety features and will be automation features so the cars can drive themselves. And we're just at the beginning. If Jaguar thinks of a virtual backseat driver to help you avoid cyclists, well, the rest are going to start thinking of that too. And the systems are just going to get better and better. And in a very short time, we're just not going to be driving. We'll get into a car. The car will ask where we want to go, or it'll present a list. We'll have a touch screen and we just hit Costco. And I will pick up a paper and start reading it, or I'll do something else. And some minutes later, where I won't even notice how long it took, the car will stop itself and I will get out and I'll be at Costco. That will happen in a very short period of time. It'll happen in stages. At first, it'll take over the driving while you're on the major part of your route, so you get a break for half the time, and then eventually it'll do most of the driving. So, a good thing. Something to help you bike sense, they call it. And actually, the combination is a super good combination, and there's a conscientious factor there too, and so, good idea, and I'm glad to see something like that. Re-listen of the week. I listened to a little bit of Boston's from their fourth album, Walk On, album. There's a medley, and there's three songs that are designed to be played together. Maybe four songs. It's like 10 or 11 minutes long. I first learned about it from others, and it's one of my favorite songs. There's such brilliance in the guitarist guy for Boston, and it's such a compelling song for me personally. It's like one of my anthems, one of my theme songs. The walk on, the drive through, the push through. So just that little snippet I heard like a minute of it yesterday. But that counts as my re-listen of the week, whether you like it or not. Pete's. My stack of books is really dramatically increasing. I'm now having to plan for future reading time for a lot of these books I got. Got a bunch of 4 different physics ones right in front of me. And then 3 off to one side and then 12 behind me. I'm overcommitted on books. But yesterday I learned about another book that I don't have. And it was a guy reviewing another book that I don't have. So here's a review written on Amazon for the book Big Money Crime by Calavita Pontel and Tillman. An excellent treatment of the savings and loan schemes is in the 1997 book Big Money Crime. Having just read the book, I can summarize the major frauds of the savings and loans. Although culpability extends much further into Congress and the administrations and their appointees. So, he's going to just summarize some of the scams that banks are doing. Land flips, using overvalued real estate as collateral, or selling other fraudulent bankers an overvalued asset, then buying it back at an inflated price. The bottom line of that one is maybe a way to suck money out of the bank, or a way to money launder, transfer money. Fees and interest are recorded on the balance sheet and they inflate these insolvent banks' working capital. So yeah, that was a way to get money out of the bank. Insider loans. After acquiring the bank, you lend yourself money with no intention of paying it back. This comment was left about a different book, and that different book was, the best way to rob a bank is to own a bank. And so they're saying that the people who own banks are the biggest criminals of them all. So these are some of the insider scams that banks do. Number 3, nominee loans, getting a straw man to buy an overvalued asset from which they can walk away from, while the bank collects fees and interest reportable as income and contributes to a false solvency and gets bad loans off the books. So it sounds like it does about 5 different things. Reciprocal lending, daisy chaining, one fraudster lends to another fraudster and receives a loan in return, both non-performing on the balance sheet, but showing points and fees as income. So ways to... It's boggling. False entries, so to make a bank look better than it is, and then people profiting from it as well. Linked financing. Deposit $1 million, get $20 million more, and then walk away from all of it. So the idea is you can use money as collateral to get another loan. So you deposit $1 million, you get $20 million, and then you walk away from it all. Yeah, I don't have really a lot of time or even reason to read further, but if you look into either of those books, then you realize that the levels of corruption are so fantastically off the scale, then you realize that the things that we are forced to consider, the things that we are forced to look at through the news and various things, are such petty, small little things compared to the massive games that they are playing constantly. So if we think that life is getting better, we are the perfect suckers. That's exactly what they want. And that's why the word conspiracy is attacked as viciously as any word in the language. They don't want us to think there are any conspiracies. It's kind of mind-boggling. You know, with the God thing, they want us to believe there is a person. Well, the conspiracy one is a harder thing to get us to all believe in. They're saying despite there being billions of conspiracies, they want us to think there are exactly none. Maybe I'll do 3 rewatches of the week. I got a little bit hooked on YouTubes yesterday. I was kind of a little bit worn out yesterday, so I watched some YouTubes at one point, and it can be hard to get out of YouTube land when you get into an interesting area. There was one on the Titanic by a guy called Engineer Guy, engineerguy.com. I believe the last time I talked about one of these engineerguy.com videos was that he did some super thorough analysis of some device. I think it was a clock or a computer. So this guy's good. Basically, for this Titanic one, he just took photos of the Titanic at all different stages. Talked about how it was built and all that kind of detail. Just a good, you know, technical piece. Then I was watching, there's a new Ferrari. It's called La Ferrari, or the Ferrari F-150, I believe. This new Ferrari is amazing. Has about 1,000 horsepower altogether. In these modern supercars, they use super high horsepower engines, and then they use an electric engine, electric motor, that can regenerate from your braking, and then it provides like another 150 horsepower. And the thing is, the electric, it's the best for starting the car. With an engine, a normally aspirated engine, at low revs it has low torque. The electric doesn't have that limitation. So they're using the electric to give you the low torque, and then the very powerful engine takes over the torque delivery problem at the higher RPMs. There's 2 or 3 of these now. There's a P1, there's a Porsche, I think it's a 918 or 928 or something, and then there's this one. These are true supercars. Someone mentioned it. I went and looked at the video they referred, and it was poor. And then I looked at, I was like, hey, let's get a good video on the subject. I ended up looking at like 3 different videos on it. And the best one was like a 14-minute review of this car. Very thorough. There's a guy, Chris Harris, who does these reviews. He's very good at it. He's obviously a real sporting guy. He's got huge insider connections. He just tells you everything about it. He tells you 100 things about this car in his video. Well, what was interesting was his ratio of likes to dislikes was 40-1. They're all in this range. And the interesting was the first video that I went to, I think its ratio of likes to dislikes, I didn't even link it here, but it was 75-1. And this thing was terrible. The quality of the video, it was very short, it had very little information, and it had more likes than the Chris Harris video. What's going on there? All right, 3rd YouTube that I watched, that's noteworthy. Someone referred this to me. They said, the video is called My Father Lies, What About Yours? And they subtitled their link as The Best Ad in 2015. So it's an ad. It starts off, this child is reading a letter, or the dad is reading a letter from the child. And this child starts off saying, my dad lies. My dad lies to me about having work. It turns out he doesn't actually have a full-time job. My dad lies about not being tired. He's exhausting himself trying to get work and trying to do things, but he wants to give his child the best. And my dad lies about all these things, and, you know, it cuts away and it shows the dad reading this and getting, you know, upset and horrified, and then it seems like things are going to end badly, and then the child says, I love you, Daddy. And then the tagline of the ad says, we all have a dream for our children. Basically, this ad is saying, give your very best for your children. But what it's really saying is, work yourself to death for your children. No matter how good you are, no matter how much you care about your kids, good luck trying to find a job. This ad is from a large insurance company, and it shows the level of control, and it shows how worthless we, the 99%, are to them. They will take everything out of the system, everything they can, and we get the scraps. And then this ad is basically saying, you should be happy with the scraps. You should be happy working yourself to death and being exhausted, not being able to pay the bills, worrying about the cost of the popsicle. This guy in the ad is buying a popsicle for the kid, and he's worried about how much it costs. And we should be like that because we're nothing. And we should be grateful for it. And then we all have a dream for our children. Imagine tying that phrase to this video, because this video is all about failure, all about control and Big Brother with their thumb on us. And you should be happy. It's like a kid playing with a bug and putting his thumb on the bug and going, you should be happy I'm not crushing you. I don't know if I told this story before, but I'll tell it again. I worked in sales, different types of sales, and one of them at one point was with a paint company. I went to a convention back east. When we went to the convention, at one point there was the big fancy sit-down meal, And they had like a placemat that our food was served on. And I actually read what was on that placement. I'll bet that 95% of the guys there, the salesmen there, did not read it. It had a lot of words. I'm not saying they don't know how to read. I'm just saying that at that kind of a thing, when you get a whole bunch of salesmen together, they're all trying to show off. It's really kind of humorous. They're all trying to show off to each other. And so you're not getting a lot of thinking going on there. So I read it. And in this placemat thing, this is what it said. This is like the key wording. This was the inspirational message from the corporate head of this very large paint company. Run, but don't weaken, for there are many more who can take your place. That's what it said. Well, that's what this ad is saying. Run, but don't weaken, because if you don't make it, we don't care. Go ahead and dream. You have no chance of fulfilling your dreams. Go ahead and dream. Your kid is counting on you dreaming. Give your best to your kid and die penniless, because we don't care. The ratio of likes to dislikes in this video was 150 likes to dislikes, so 75 to 1. This one had a higher than normal ratio of likes, twice as many likes to dislikes as the fantastic car review one. So an ad has twice the likes to dislikes of a fantastically detailed ad-free analysis of a supercar. That's how screwed up these likes and dislikes are on YouTube. You can't tell me it's by accident. The reason you can't tell me is I'm the one doing the talking here. Cool and uncool thing of the week. Uncool. Story headline. Are your medications safe? This is a really detailed article. And by the way, this was on Slate.com. I had chewed out Slate as being a kind of a bad site. I think what I figured out with Slate, why I don't like it, I don't like the way things are formatted there. They don't scan, they don't read well. And it's one of these sites where they have too many links to other places. And in the case of Slate, for some reason they make the links super visible. So they're super distracting. And what happens when you have too many links and they're too distracting is you're reading along and then you have this link and it's a big, bold. They make the text black on white, I think, or white on black. And then the links are like red and bolded red. So they're super standout. Well, the problem is you hover over the link and you look, where are they trying to send me to? And do I want to go there? Is this important? And you have to make all these decisions while you're reading the article instead of the article having a flow to it. Anyway, this was a pretty good thing. I think this was a professor at a university or whatever. And then he and his students researched in a super detailed way. They researched drugs and drug studies. Here's the bottom line. Drugs are not tested properly. They fabricate the test, they fabricate the results, they lie, they're huge scams. The FDA knows about this, and then the FDA buries that as well. The FDA is totally in the book of these drug companies. In my notes I say, anyone taking drugs might as well be playing Russian roulette. You have no idea which drugs got approved for bad reasons. In some cases, they even now know the bad reasons, the lie, and the drugs are still approved. Kid you not. And this is not just in some cases, hundreds. These guys looked at something like 650 studies. All right, my cool thing of the week. This is just a simple tagline at the end of an ad. You know, I mute the ads so you don't normally get the content of ads, which is good. I think on this particular ad, I think I might even have been listening because it was different. It shows a guy driving a vehicle on a highway. It's very beautiful, very scenic, sort of a very natural vibe to it. And then it pulls away from the guy, again showing the beautiful scenic environment. And the tagline comes up on the screen. This is for a battery company, Interstate Batteries. It says, "We recycle more batteries than we sell." Now that's kind of cool. So we actually recycle more than you sell. So they didn't just tie their policy and say, you can trade in a battery. If you buy one, you can give us one. They clearly have a recycling program for batteries that's completely independent from the sale of batteries. And they clearly make money from recycling. I'm not saying they don't. But then they can just quietly trumpet that they recycle more than they sell. It's kind of hard to be annoyed at somebody who reuses more than they waste. All right, two quotes of the week. One of them, I guess this is the original book that I went to Amazon to read about, was called "The Best Way to Rob a Bank is to Own One." So that's the title of a book, but it's also one of my quotes of the week. We don't normally think of these things. They know this. They keep certain things from us. And so they get us worried about small level things that will never resolve. Abortion will never resolve. gay rights issues will never resolve. They don't want it to resolve. Being a vegetarian or a meat eater, that will never resolve. They will never just change society unless it completely suits them and they have gained much more control in some other area. Then they might relinquish control in one area. Meanwhile, the best way to rob a bank is to own one. That book is by William K. Black. Might be worth checking out. The other quote of the week. There is a point in every contest when sitting on the sidelines is not an option. This is by Coach Dean Smith, who passed away. Truer words were never spoken. In every contest, there will be a point where sitting on the sidelines is not an option. Well, in this case, the ultimate contest is their goal of depopulating the world, their goal of controlling everything and depopulating the world. At some point, I guarantee you, to each and every person listening to this, there will come a point where you're going to have to decide. And you're going to have to take a side. And sitting on the sidelines and watching this world fall apart is going to stop being an option for you. You're going to have to choose when. It's not going to be if, it's going to be when. I'm at my when. This has been Floyd Maxwell, justthinking.com, doing a Floydcast number 53 for February 16, 2015. Good luck with your life. Take care.